Today, we are very fortunate to have the association of His Grace Gauranga Darshan Prabhuji. Prabhuji is going to enlighten us on the topic of Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 1, Verse 11. So, thank you so much, Prabhuji, for your valuable time and association. Before I hand over call to you, I would like to hand over the call to Tiffany Mataji to give a brief introduction about Prabhuji. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. His Grace Gauranga Darshan Das, a disciple of His Holiness Ramnath Swami, is the Associate Dean of Academic Affairs at the Bhaktivedanta Vidyapitha Research Center at Govardhan Eco Village. He is a member of the ISKCON Board of Examinations, and he holds a master's degree from the Indian Institute of Science, Bangalore. He teaches Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Vaishnava character courses at the Govardhan Eco Village and at several places in India. Gauranga Darshan Das has written several books, including Gita Subodhini, Bhagavad Gita Subodhini, Chaitanya Subodhini, Disapproved but Not Disowned, Bhagavata Pravaha, and Gita the Jewel Box. He has a special fondness for reciting and meditating on scriptural verses and has compiled sloka books, namely Gita Ratnamala, Bhagavata Ratnamala, Chaitanya Ratnamala, and Bhagavata Tattvamala. He also runs a free monthly e-magazine called Bhagavata Pradipika and regularly writes educational and devotional articles that also appear in Back to Godhead Magazine International in multiple Indian language editions. He is also known for his lucid talks with captivating visuals and also presentations that give a bird's eye view of an entire book or a section. So far, he has delivered over 4,500 hours of spiritual discourse. He has guided several students in their Shastric study. He also oversees deity worship at Govardhan Eco Village. So Hare Krishna, welcome to the call.
Thank you, Tiffany Mataji. Once again, thank you so much, Prabhuji, for your time and association. Please accept my humble obeisances. Please take over the call, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Hare Krishna. Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter number 1, Text number 11, right? So may I see the, I have folio open. Yeah. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Nirbodhatate Damritam Brabhimi Mashuyitam Deva Marhatya Prameyam Vayam bhavaste tata esha maharshir vahama sarve vivashayasya dishtam. Can you scroll down? Yeah. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace S.E. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Lord Brahma, the Supreme Person within this universe, said, here Bhagavan in this shloka refers to actually Brahma. My dear Priyavrata, kindly hear attentively what I shall say to you. Do not be jealous of the Supreme Lord, who is beyond our experimental measurements. All of us, including Lord Shiva, your father, and the great sage Maharshi Narada, must carry out the order of the Supreme. We cannot deviate from his order. Purport. Of the 12 great authorities in the devotional service, 4, Lord Brahma himself, his son Narada, Swayambhu Manu, and Lord Shiva, were present before Priyavrata. They were accompanied by many authoritative sages. Brahma first wanted to impress upon Priyavrata that although these great personalities are all authorities, they cannot possibly disobey the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is described in this verse as Deva, which means always glorious. The power, glory, and potencies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead can never be diminished. In the Ishopanishad, the Lord is described as Apapa Vidha, which indicates that he is never affected by anything materially considered sinful. Similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam describes the Supreme Personality of Godhead as being so powerful that nothing we might consider abominable can affect him. An example sometimes of the sun, which evaporates urine from the earth but is never affected by contamination. The Supreme Lord can never be accused of doing anything wrong. When Lord Brahma went to induce Priyavrata to accept the responsibility of ruling the universe, he did not go whimsically. He was following the dictations of the Supreme Lord. Indeed, Brahma and other genuine authorities never do anything without his permission. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart. In the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said, Tene Brahma Hridayadikavaye. The Lord dictated Vedic knowledge to Brahma through his heart. The more a living entity is purified by devotional service, the more he comes in direct contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as confirmed in Srimad Bhagavad Gita. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam pritipurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayantiti. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Lord Brahma therefore did not come to Priyavrata by his own whims. Rather, it is understood that he had been ordered to persuade Priyavrata by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose activities cannot be understood by material senses and who is therefore described here in his Aprameya. Thus, Lord Brahma first advised Priyavrata to hear his words with attention without envy. Why one is induced to perform certain acts despite his desire to do something else is indicated herein. One cannot disobey the orders of the Supreme Lord, even if one is as powerful as Lord Shiva, Brahma, Manu, and Narada. All these authorities are certainly very powerful, but they do not have the power to disobey the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Since Lord Brahma had come to Priyavrata in accordance with the orders of the Supreme Lord, he first wanted to dispel any suspicions that he might be acting as Priyavrata's enemy. Lord Brahma was following the orders of the Supreme Lord, and therefore it would be worthwhile for Priyavrata to accept Lord Brahma's order as the Lord desired. Hare Krishna. Very beautiful and comprehensive purport describing the context of the predicament of Priyavrata Maharaj. Priyavrata Maharaj was the son of Swayambhu Manu, as we know. Swayambhu Manu had five children: Devahuti, Akuti, Prasuti. These three are daughters. Uttanapad and Priyavrata are the sons. So in the third canto and fourth canto, our Maitreya Muni has described the dynasty of Swayambhu Manu. He described the lineages of Devahuti, Akuti and Prasuti, and also very elaborately the lineage of Uttanapad. And now in the fifth canto, first chapter onwards, he is going to describe the lineage of Priyavrata Maharaj. So Priyavrata Maharaj's lineage would be described from the first chapter of fifth canto up to 15th chapter. So Priyavrata's story is very unique. So unlike his brother Uttanapada and many other sages, Priyavrata was first desiring to remain as a brahmachari throughout his life. So he was under the guidance of Narada Muni. And Narada Muni was known to induce so many people in this universe to perform bhakti yoga, to become devotees of the Supreme Lord Krishna. However, in this context, Priyavrata Maharaj, although he was under the training of Narada Muni, especially as a renunciant, still Priyavrata Maharaj was requested by Swayambhu Manu to accept household life and also to accept the responsibilities of ruling the kingdom. Now you see, he has a desire to remain as a brahmachari or a sannyasi, as a full-time renounced order member. But his father has a different desire. The son of Brahma. And who is Brahma? The son of Garbhodak Sai Vishnu. So Swayambhu Manu was the grandson of Garbhodak Sai Vishnu, who is inducing his son to give up that renounced order, his plans to be in the renounced order and to accept the responsibilities of household life and the kingdom. So here Priyavrata Maharaj was in a dilemma, because Priyavrata Maharaj did not like this proposal. At the same time, he could not say no, because his honorable father and Swayambhu Manu is personally coming and requesting him. So Priyavrata Maharaj could not say yes, could not say no. If he says yes, that would be against his own desire. If he says no, that would be disobedience to a great personality. He's not only father, he's not only Manu. Swayambhu Manu was not only a great progenitor of mankind, not only the father of Priyavrata Maharaj, he's a great devotee of the Supreme Lord also. So saying no to him, being disobedient to him, is not possible for Priyavrata Maharaj. At the same time, Priyavrata had his own desire to dedicate his entire life for full-time performance of devotional service into the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord Krishna under the guidance of another renunciant, Narada Muni. So both are like very important things. He cannot say yes or he cannot say no. He was in a little dilemma. So in that context, another great devotee, our great Lord Brahma, who is the grandfather of Priyavrata Maharaj, he appeared on the scene. And he did not come alone. He also brought Shiva along with him. And he also had so many other celestial residents and great personalities, universal celebrities accompanying Brahma. So Brahma was one Mahajan. Out of 12 Mahajan, there is Brahma and there is Lord Shiva also. And Swayambhuman was also a Mahajan. And Narada Muni was also a Mahajan. There are 4 Mahajans in the presence of Priyavrata Maharaj now. So Priyavrata Maharaj had to take a decision. So whether to remain as a renunciant or to accept household life and the responsibilities of kingdom, Priyavrata Maharaj has to make a decision now in front of 4 Mahajans. It's a very important decision. So Priyavrata Maharaj was in a great dilemma. So Priyavrata Maharaj was, he was unable to decide something. Then our Brahma came and started speaking. So the verse that we just read now is the first shloka spoken by Brahma. So Brahma said that, my dear Priyavrata, actually Brahma smiled first. Because Brahma was Brahma, of course, the creator of the universe and the first created being in this entire material realm, the material universe. Thus, he has a post and he has a position. And from another perspective, Brahma was the grandfather of Priyavrata Maharaj. Here, grandson is desiring to do something and the grandfather wants to change that desire, change that plan. So here there is another nice humor, a very loving exchange that is happening between grandfather and grandson. So that is one perspective. But this is also a very important decision to be taken at this point of the universal time scale. Now, why Swayambhu Manu had to come and request this Priyavrata to take charge of the kingdom? Because Swayambhu Manu had another son named Uttanapad, but Uttanapad Maharaj had sons named Dhruva, and he had so many other descendants, Dhruva, Uttama, and many other descendants. So Uttanapada's lineage has been described in Bhagavatam 4th canto, 8th chapter, till the end, till 31st chapter. So Uttanapad Maharaj, then Dhruva Maharaj, and later we have Anga Maharaj, then Vena, then Prithu Maharaj, then Prachina Barhi, Pracheta. But somehow all these personalities have ruled for a while and retired also. So now the last descendant in this Uttanapada's lineage was Daksha. Daksha was reborn as the son of Prachetas, but Daksha went to perform austerities for about 5 manmantras. So Daksha, although he was reborn as the son of Prachetas in the lineage of Uttanapad, he would perform austerities and then he would take charge of creation only in the 6th manmantra. That will be described in the 6th canto. Now we are in 5th canto only. So now Daksha, who is supposed to be taking charge of the kingdom, was not available. He was in austerities. And Swayambhu Manu was very old. Of course, he still has strength and all. So they are very celestial and very great personalities. They don't become so old easily. And their old age is not like our old age. But nevertheless, Swayambhu Manu, he wants to retire. He cannot take charge of the kingdom, or he cannot take charge of other responsibilities for such a long time. And that's the nature of Rajarshis. Rajarshis rule with responsibility and retire with renunciation. So when there is a right successor to take charge of the kingdom and the responsibilities of taking care of the family, so then these great Rajarshis would just give up their kingdom and they would take to full-time devotional service. Now it is the time for Swayambhu Manu to perform full-time devotional service, and for that someone has to take charge of the kingdom. So he requested Priyavrat Maharaj. But Priyavrat Maharaj is more eager to renounce. So that's the nature of Rajarshis. Rajarshis means saintly kings. So these saintly kings, they rule very responsibly as a representative of the Supreme Lord, not as a replacement of the Supreme Lord. And when the right time comes, when there is a right successor available to take charge of the kingdom, they will retire. They will take to full-time devotional service. So in the name of responsibility, they don't get unduly attached to the kingdom and facilities and the royal order. And in the name of being detached, they don't behave irresponsibly also. As long as they are taking charge of the kingdom, they do it with responsibility. But when the right time comes, they retire also. So this we can see in the stories of several kings like Swayambhu Manu and later Priyavrat Maharaj, before Uttanapad Maharaj. Then we will also see Bharat Maharaj, Parikshit Maharaj, Yudhishthir Maharaj, Ambarish Maharaj. Like that, there are so many exalted souls, Prachetas, Prithu Maharaj. So all these are Maharajas, they are emperors, they are great kings who rule the earth, but they retired also when the right time came. So here Swayambhu Manu wanted to retire, and his son Priyavrata also is wanting to retire. He already retired. So for Swayambhu Manu to retire, he has to bring back the retired son into responsibility of the kingdom. So that's the situation of Swayambhu Manu. Now, our Priyavrata Maharaj is not ready to accept this instruction. He didn't say no yet, but he didn't say yes also. So in this context, our Brahma came. So Brahma came considering the emergency of the situation. So because Brahma came along with Shiva and many other celestial beings, so it must be a very serious thing. So Brahma is trying to convince our Priyavrata Maharaj. He says that, I did not come to request you to take charge of the kingdom out of my own whimsical desires. I am doing it only on the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Supreme Lord Vishnu or Krishna called Brahma for a meeting and then said, oh, my dear Brahma, you should go to Priyavrata Maharaj and then push him to take charge of the kingdom. It was never explicitly stated within this chapter of Bhagavatam or anywhere else in Bhagavatam. But Prabhupada clarifies, and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur also clarifies in his commentary, that basically this Brahma, Narada, and Swayambhu Manu, all these great personalities, they're induced by the Supreme Lord from within. So Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam, Prabhupada also quotes this shloka in the purport. Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yenama Upayantiti. So the Supreme Lord inspires a devotee from within. So now, based on the inspiration given by the Lord, devotees come and do some activities. For example, now we know the story of Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj has been insulted by his stepmother Suruchi, and he became extremely angry. But while he was crying, no one came to pacify him. So he cried, and then he went to his mother Suniti, another room, another palace. Then Suniti just embraced him, took him on her lap, and then Suniti told him three things. My dear son, Dhruva Maharaj. She said that she said three things. First is, don't desire harm for others. Even if they harmed you, even if they insulted you, even if they have spoken very harshly and behaved very rudely with you, still, you should not contemplate harm for others. You should not desire that they should be ruined. Okay, first point. Second, she said was, whatever difficulties or insults or inappropriate ways or mistreatments that we receive in our lives is only a result of our own past mistakes. Today we are insulted by Suruchi. Means we must have done something like that to others and we are getting the reaction now. So it's a result of our own past deed. So she said that. That's the second point. And the third point that she said was, whatever desire you may have, you should worship the Supreme Lord. Okay, means Dhruva had a desire to sit on father's lap or father's throne, but that desire was not fulfilled. And Dhruva became quite disappointed and disgraced and he became angry. So Suniti said that, my dear child, you should just worship the Supreme Lord, whatever desire you may have. So the first two things did not register in Dhruva's mind, but the third thing resisted. I should worship the Supreme Lord to fulfill any of my desires. So what did Dhruva do? Dhruva Maharaj went to the forest alone, right? He left father's palace, 5-year-old child. He went to the forest. Now, Suniti was inspired by the Lord from within to give such good advice to this small child. She did not, she detected, my child is getting affected by this insult. So, negative feelings or revengeful thoughts should not enter my child's tender heart. So she immediately told him, don't think of harming others, right? So next, she also said to take shelter of the Supreme Lord. And Dhruva Maharaj went into the forest. Then Narada Muni came there. Narada Muni was not there in this scene. When Dhruva was being insulted by Suruchi or when Dhruva was being advised by Suniti, Narada was not there on the scene. And Dhruva was not welcomed by Uttanapada. Narada did not see it live. But Narada understands everything. Prabhupada writes that Narada Muni has been inspired by the Supreme Lord from within to go and guide Dhruva Maharaj. Because Dhruva Maharaj, with an ambitious material desire, of course, he was about to worship the Supreme Lord in the forest alone. He needs guidance. So the Supreme Lord inspired Narada Muni from within to go and guide Dhruva Maharaj. Right? So devotees are inspired by the Supreme Lord from within. Now there is another incident in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. We understands that Krishna is enjoying too much in Vrindavan. Krishna goes to Vrindavan right on his birthday. So he just appears in the prison cell of Kamsa and Devaki gives him milk from her own body. And that's the only interaction that he had with his parents. And they offer some prayers and then a few, you know, exchange of words. And immediately the Lord inspired Vasudev. Bhagavat Prachodita. So the Lord inspired Vasudev to carry little baby Krishna from Kamsa's prison cell to Yashodamai's bedroom in Gokul. So Vasudev took Krishna and left Krishna next to Yashoda Mata. And then there was a baby girl next to Yashoda. And our Vasudev picked her up and then brought to Kamsa's cell. So since then, for about a decade, for more than a decade, Krishna is just absorbed in Vrindavan pastimes, killing so many demons, playing with gopas and gopis and cows and calves and playing flute and doing so many things in Vrindavan, you know, all sweet pastimes. So 40 chapters went like this, you know, 38, 37 chapters went like this. So Narada Muni thought that how long Krishna will stay in Vrindavan? He should show some mercy towards the devotees of Mathura also. So what did Narada Muni do? He went to Kamsa and said, Kamsa, you have been searching for the eighth child of Devaki since long time. Durga declared that the child who is going to kill you has already appeared and then he is somewhere else. So you have been searching for that person who is going to kill you since long time. I know who is that. It is Krishna. Krishna is the eighth child of Devaki and Vasudev, and your sister and brother-in-law, Devaki and Vasudev, have royally cheated you. So they took this baby Krishna in the middle of the night and they left baby Krishna in Nanda Maharaj's house, and that boy is being taken care by Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mata very nicely, and you are cheated. Then Kamsa became so furious and he went and tried to kill Devaki and Vasudev, and Narada Muni again said, stop, stop. If you kill Devaki and Vasudev, Krishna and Balaram will run away. So first bring them here, then you can kill them. Then Kamsa brought Krishna and Balaram, and then instead of Kamsa killing Devaki and Vasudev, Krishna killed Kamsa and then protected Devaki and Vasudev. You know the whole story. But here, Narada Muni took a decision. There is no mention that Narada Muni went and consulted Krishna. Krishna, should I go and reveal? So Narada Muni felt that Krishna should come to Mathura now. So Narada Muni went and revealed this whole secret to Kamsa. And later Narada Muni comes before Krishna kills Keshi, and because when Narada Muni revealed this birth secret of Krishna to Kamsa, Kamsa immediately dispatched two great demons, Keshi and Vyomasur. So before Keshi and Vyomasur came, I think Krishna first kills Keshi demon, and then Narada Muni comes to have a meeting with Krishna in Vrindavan. He says, my dear Krishna, and all other gopas of Krishna, they are playing. So Narada Muni comes for a private meeting with Krishna and says, Krishna, I revealed your birth secret to Kamsa. Kamsa is going to send Akrura, and I can see tomorrow you are going from Vrindavan to Mathura, and after tomorrow you are going to kill Kamsa. And then later you will get trained under Sandipani Muni. Then you will also defeat Jarasandha and defeat Kalayavana. And you will also erect Dwaraka Fort. You will marry the Rukmini and then Satyabhama, Jambavati, like that. All the future pastimes of Krishna, Narada Muni is going to enumerate. He enumerates in front of Krishna. Krishna silently heard. Okay, you told him. Okay, I'll go. So now the Supreme Lord empowers and inspires his devotees to understand his own mission. So Narada Muni, without consulting Krishna, did all these activities because of Krishna's empowerment, because the pure devotees are so much in sync with the Supreme Lord's mind and thoughts that whatever they do is very much in alignment with the will of the Lord. Pure devotees. No, we cannot, immature neophyte practitioner cannot say that, oh, I am also in sync. In an immature stage, but pure devotees like Narada Muni, Brahma, so they can do that. Now you see, there is a beautiful shloka in the sixth chapter of second canto.
न भारती मेंग वृषोपलक्ष्यते न वै क्वचिन्मे मनसो वृषागति न मे हृषीकाणि पतन्त्य सत्पथे यन्मे हृदोत्कण्ठ्यवता धृतो हरिः न भारती मेंग वृषोपलक्ष्यते ब्रह्मा सेस दिस श्लोक टू नारद मुनि ही सेस न भारती मेंग वृषोपलक्ष्यते मींस माय वर्ड्स कैन नेवर गो रॉन्ग न भारती मेंग वृषोपलक्ष्यते न वै क्वचिन्मे मनसो वृषागति My mind can never think anything wrong. My words cannot be wrong. My thoughts cannot be wrong. Name hrishikani patanti asatpathe. My hrishikas, my senses can never go in a wrong direction. Why? Yanme hridi outkanthyavata dhrto harihi. Within my heart. So because the devotees are so dedicated to the Supreme Lord's lotus feet, whatever they say, whatever they do, whatever they think is perfect, is in agreement with the Supreme Lord's will. Now, I just gave a few examples. Coming back to our story of Prevrata Maharaj, here Brahma says, and Prabhupada writes several times within this purport, that it's not that Brahma is coming and requesting Prevrata Maharaj to just give up this renounced order and accept the throne and household life out of his own whims. So Brahma was not whimsically telling him, oh, you come back to your kingdom, right? So enough of your renounced order. So you should go and sit on the throne. You should marry now. So he did not do it whimsically. He has been inspired by the Lord. It is the order of the Supreme Lord. Now, 11th shloka we read, right? In the 12th shloka,
think in 12th shloka, Brahma says, natasya kaschit tapasa vidyajava nayo. Kritam vihantum tanubhradvi bhoyat. Yes, yes, this shloka. Natasya kaschit tapasa vidyajava. Tapasa means austerity. Vidya means education. Yoga means one's mystic power. Virya means one's own physical strength. Manisha means advanced intelligence. Artha, naivartha. Artha means money. Dharma means one's own religious power. Parataha svatova, by one's own religious power or other's religious power. Or one's own, all these faculties are other's faculties. Kritam vihantum tanubhrit vibhuyat. One can never deny the order of the Supreme Lord. Okay. So whoever has accepted a body is very much obliged to the Supreme Lord, and he must follow the Supreme Lord's orders, right? So right from Brahma down to the end, how do we understand the will of the Supreme Lord? Through Guru, Sadhu and Shastra in our case. Brahma can directly understand, because Prabhupada also quotes in this current purport, Tene Brahma Hridayadikavaye Muhyanti Yat Swarayaha. Tene Brahma Hridayadikavaye means the Supreme Lord has personally instructed Brahma from within. All the Vedic knowledge has been revealed to Brahma by the Supreme Lord personally. Means Brahma is the original student of the Vedas. Okay, that's clear. So when Brahma says something, it has to be correct. When Brahma instructs Priyavrat Maharaj to take charge of the kingdom, it has to be correct. So Priyavrat Maharaj should not have any doubts in this, right? So Priyavrat Maharaj had to agree now. So now we saw that devotees, pure devotees at the stage of Brahma, Mahajams like Brahma, Narada and all these personalities, they are very much in sync with the Supreme Lord's intentions and desires and will and instructions. And when they say something, so it has to be followed, right? So now let's discuss one thing from Prevrata's perspective. So far we have been speaking from Brahma's perspective. Let's speak from Prevrata's perspective also. So Prevrata Maharaj is in a dilemma. So what happens to his desire? Yes, authority is instructed. This authority, Brahma, authority, Swayambhu Manu, in the presence of other authorities like Narada Muni and have a genuine need, definitely. But what about his own desire? So our Priyavrata Maharaj has a genuine desire to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead throughout his life, without having to take charge of these responsibilities of kingdom, household life, children, wife and all this. But here, even if Priyavrata Maharaj had said a no, he would be justified in one sense, because he was not saying no whimsically again. So Priyavrata Maharaj had a bona fide reason. Now in this context, let's remember another example from the third canto of Bhagavatam. In the third canto of Bhagavatam, we saw the example of four Kumaras. So four Kumaras were the first created beings by Lord Brahma. And Brahma told them, my dear four Kumaras, please create progeny. What did they say? So they said, Brahma, my dear father, honorable we think, there are four people. We cannot accept household life. Why? Vasudeva Parayana. So four Kumaras are Vasudeva Parayana. They are completely dedicated to Lord Vasudeva. And these four Kumaras have absolutely no desire to enter household life and procreate and create progeny and populate the universe and take care of other responsibilities of household life. They are not interested in that. They're not meant for that. So they immediately denied. They said, no, Brahma, we cannot do this. We are sorry, right? We are Vasudeva Parayana. So how is it justified? Now, same instruction, somewhat similar instruction, Brahma is giving to Priyavrata Maharaj. So Brahma told four Kumaras to create progeny in the beginning of creation, accept household life, create progeny and populate the universe. Now this Brahma
is instructing Prevarta Maharaj also to take charge of the kingdom. So taking charge of the kingdom cannot be done as a brahmachari, as a brahmachari. There is also a responsibility of giving a proper successor as the next king. So Prevarta Maharaj has to marry. Along with taking charge of the kingdom, he has to marry, he has to create progeny, he has to give successors or train next king. All these responsibilities are included in this one-line instruction. Okay. So the instruction given to four Kumaras and Prevarta is same, more or less same. And the same personality is also given. Of course. Creation, so many generations are there. So here, four Kumaras said no, and Prevarta Maharaj said yes. Finally, he will say yes. After a few shlokas, he will say yes, yes, yes. So who is right? The instruction is same, the instructor is same, but the responses are opposite, different. Who is right? So now, in fact, both are right. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur and Prabhupada and our esteemed acharyas are supporting both cases. So four Kumaras denied the instruction of Brahma to accept household life and create progeny because they are Vasudeva Parayana, right? So they gave priority or importance to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead rather than accepting certain external responsibilities, which are also important. They are also part of service of the Supreme Lord, but they prefer to do that service. And because of that bona fide reason, they had to say no to our Brahma. Yes, he did not say no. Because Swayambhumanu was there, Narada Muni was there, and Brahma was there, Shiva was there. So when so many people have assembled, it's a very serious thing and he cannot say no. And one more thing is, it's not that he was obliged. Yes, there's an obligation. But he was not pressurized or forced or threatened to take this instruction. He voluntarily agreed. And what was his mood in giving up that renounced, the position of being in a renounced order and accepting household life in obedience to these great souls? His mood was, let me sacrifice my own personal desire to serve the Lord, to serve the Lord's representatives, to serve the devotees of the Lord, to serve the instructions of the Supreme Lord's devotees. So Prevarta Maharaj is appreciated for his sacrificing spirit. And because he extended himself in assisting his superiors and Swayambhumanu and all in accepting a bona fide responsibility under the rule of the Supreme Lord. And Brahma was quoting the Supreme Lord. Yes, yes, it is because of the inspiration given to me by the Supreme Lord. I am coming to you and instructing you in this way. Don't take me wrong. Don't consider me as your enemy. I am not your enemy. Don't be jealous of me. Don't be jealous of the Supreme Lord. So now when one is so obsessed with certain desire to perform some activity, then one may see other people who might kind of put some blocks or interruptions or obstacles in their fulfillment of desires as enemies. It's natural. But Brahma clearly says, I am not your enemy. The Supreme Lord is also not your enemy. Don't be envious of us. Don't be jealous of us. It's the requirement at this stage in the creation, because no one is there to take charge of the kingdom. You are a bona fide and authorized and capable candidate to take care of the kingdom. So please accept this. And it's not permanent. Of course, somebody, even if he accepts the responsibilities of a kingdom as a king or as a family man forever. So Prevarta Maharaj would be ruling the kingdom for a while, and after some time he would just give up also. Right? But that little time that he has to spare to rectify the situation of the kingdom is important, is necessary. Right? So Prevarta Maharaj has accepted it. And he's glorious. Prabhupada and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, they glorify. Our acharyas glorify. So whether is important, under what circumstances, in what mood are they saying yes or no? So now when four Kumaras said no, Brahma was slightly agitated for a moment, But he understood, yeah, he respected. It's not that there was a problem with the relationship. So, because Four Kumaras said no to Brahma, the relationship between Brahma and Four Kumaras has been disrupted. Huh? It's not like that. So, they continued to be father and sons, both as devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and their interactions also continue. So, Brahma understood their mood. Brahma understood their need. Brahma could appreciate their deed. Okay. So, Brahma understood, although there was a slight agitation in the beginning, and from that agitation, Shiva was born. Okay. But Brahma immediately could control his anger and control that agitation, and then he was okay with Four Kumaras' decision. There is another devotee, Kardama Muni. You see, in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is another devotee named Kardama Muni. So this Kardama Muni was also a son of Brahma, and he also was instructed by Brahma to create progeny. What did Kardama Muni do? Kardama Muni said, okay, I will follow your instruction. Okay. So Kardama Muni went and performed 10,000 years of devotional austerities to please the Supreme Lord. You can see his story in the third canto of Bhagavatam, 21st chapter to 24th chapter. 3.21 describes his austerities. So Kardama Muni went on the banks of Bindu Sarovar. He worshipped with the Supreme Lord for 10,000 years. And then the Supreme Lord Vishnu came on the back of Garuda to Bindu Sarovar and gave benedictions to Kardama Muni. So what was the desire of Kardama Muni? Kardama Muni said, Brahma instructed me to create progeny, marry and enter household life and all. So please give me a suitable wife. Then, to cut the long story short, Lord Vishnu said, okay, Devahuti will be your wife. The day after tomorrow, Swayambhumanu will come with his daughter Devahuti and give the daughter to you. And you can marry her and you will have 9 nice daughters, and I will personally appear as your son. Okay. So the Lord, then Kardama Muni said, okay, fine, no problem. So I'm going to execute the instruction of Brahma. Then Swayambhumanu came with his daughter Devahuti and his wife Shatarupa. So then Swayambhumanu said that, please accept my daughter Devahuti. And Kardama Muni said, yes, I will accept. But one condition. What was the condition? As soon as Devahuti gives birth to some children, I am going to retire. I am going to give up my household life. I am going to perform full-time devotional service outside home. Right, I'll become sannyasi. So he made his retirement plan before even getting married. Okay. And he performed 10,000 years of devotional service before getting married. And his married life was very brief. And after that, when he got children, when Kapiladeva was born, he retired. So now you see, Four Kumaras, they said no to enter household life. Priyavrata Maharaj, he said yes, and enter household life and created progeny and ruled for the planet for a long time. I'm going to describe what all Priyavrata has done in a couple of minutes. And for our Kardama Muni, he accepted household life. But before accepting household life, he did bhakti. And during household life also, he did bhakti, definitely. And after children were born, he immediately retired. So he executed the instruction to some degree, right? And that's like quite befitting, as I says, right, for his situation. So now basically he prioritizes Kardama Muni. It's very clear, Acharya say that Kardama Muni prioritized his commitment to the Supreme Lord more than his commitment to Brahma. Of course, Brahma and the Lord are very much in sync with each other, no doubt about it. But his commitment to full-time devotional service to the Supreme Lord is a more priority to Kardama Muni than creating progeny and all that. Although this is also an important service. So he balanced both. But Four Kumaras said that, no, we can't enter this arena anymore. We cannot enter this arena at all. So we want to just stick to full-time devotional service only. But Priyavrata Maharaj, what he did, he accepted the instruction. He understood the seriousness of the situation. So Priyavrata Maharaj ruled for, I think, somewhere 11 Arbuda years is mentioned. It's very long, several thousands of years he ruled, and he married, and he got 10 sons. Now, out of these 10 sons, 3 people became renunciants again. Okay, Priyavrata did not bring them back. And there are 7 other sons. So, Priyavrata Maharaj ruled the kingdom in such a way that his contribution to this universal geography or universal cosmology was also very immense. What was that? So, Priyavrata Maharaj, while ruling, he was once displeased with the movements of the sun. Sun is giving light in one hemisphere of the universe. Other people are experiencing darkness. So Priyavrata Maharaj expanded himself into second Priyavrata. He has that mystic power. Okay. So he's there as Priyavrata in the kingdom ruling the citizens. He's also there as another replica of sun god, not to compete with sun god. Definitely Vaishnavas do not like to compete with other Vaishnavas, but in service attitude, in a mode of service. So Priyavrata mounted another chariot and he started giving light by his own potency, by his own mystic potency. He started giving light on the other side of the universe. So by rotating, by circling the globe on the opposite direction of the sun. So while Priyavrata Maharaj was, running around the globe on the Bhumandala, he created 7 ditches on the Bhumandala, right? These 7 ditches became 7 universal oceans. So on the Bhumandala, now there are 7 oceans, which are like rings. And when there are 7 oceans, there must be 7 islands also between those oceans. So 7 oceans and 7 islands. The ditches created by the wheels of Priyavrata's chariot, while he's moving, imitating the movements of sun, created 7 universal oceans. That salt water ocean, sugar cane juice ocean, milk ocean, yogurt ocean, all these oceans were created. So Priyavrata Maharaj, although he accepted an instruction which is not very much appealing to him, he did not underperform. For example, sometimes we are forced to do some activity and we are not excited to do it. We are pushed a little bit. So, okay, fine, I'll do it. That does not mean we underperform. So, although the instruction was not something that he has taken with great eagerness and enthusiasm, it was not his desire. Because it is superior's desire, I must do it and I must do a good job of it. Right? So, Priyavrata Maharaj ruled the earth with so much responsibility. And I said he had 10 sons. Out of these 10 sons, 3 people became complete renunciants and 7 people became the rulers of these 7 islands. Their Agni, Dhra, and then many other people. And Priyavrata Maharaj has another wife and he had another 3 sons also. Right? So total 13 sons he had from 2 wives. So the other 3 sons, so first 10 I told who are they. Other 3 sons became the Manus of next 3 Manvantaras. Uttama, Tamasa, Raivata. So Uttama, 3rd Manvantara. Tamasa, 4th. Raivata, 5th Manvantara. 6th is Chakshusha Manvantara. So like that, 2nd Swarochisha, I think, I don't remember exactly. So, although Priyavrata Maharaj was not a Manu, the way he ruled the universe was as good as a Manu or even more than a Manu, and he became the father of 3 Manus for the other 3 Manvantaras, 3rd, 4th and 5th Manvantaras, right? So, in this way, we see that Priyavrata Maharaj, although he accepted a service which he himself was not excited in the beginning, he performed the service with great commitment, with full responsibility, and he pleased his authorities. He pleased his superiors, Brahma, Swayambhu Manu, and all that. That's what has happened in future. And after a while, he realized that I am getting too much absorbed in these affairs, political affairs, and kingly responsibilities, and my wife, and all that. So then he gave up the kingdom. He gave the kingdom to his sons, and he retired. And he came back to the position in which Narada Muni kept him. So he resumed the position that is given to him by Narada Muni. So it's not that Priyavrata Maharaj has given up his renounced order, given up his devotional service. Ultimately, this renounced order is not the main thing. So pure devotional service is the main thing, right? This ashram is temporary, varna is temporary, the one situation in Varnashrama system is temporary, but once pure devotional service is permanent. The original identity of all living entities as servant of the Lord of Gopis of Vrindavan, that is Krishna, right? So Krishna's servants, we are all Krishna's servants, servants of the servants of Krishna. So our Privrata has been reinstated in that position after completing his responsibility, after doing the service which his superiors wanted him to do. So now we see that Privrata Maharaj has accepted this responsibility with an intention to please his superiors. Now, very important point. We need to see Guru or superior devotee, senior Vaishnavas as representatives of Krishna. So this principle of obedience to the orders of superiors is a very important principle, right? It's an extremely important principle, even in material circles, what to speak of spiritual circles. So even in material circles also, when a student is obedient to this teacher, respectful to the teacher, and accepts the advices or instructions of the teacher, definitely the student will learn more, he will get more benefit from the guru, right? More than an arrogant student. Right, generally. Now, it is all the more true and important in the case of spiritual life. In spiritual life, one needs to be very much obedient and submissive to the instructions of superiors. One should not disrespect them or dishonor their instructions. Yeah, sometimes there may be some kind of difficulty or concern, you can express, that's a different thing. There is always a discussion. But point is, the principle of obedience should not be compromised by a disciple. Now, you see, that happens by trust. So one should trust the intentions of one's guru. One should have faith in the representatives of the Supreme Lord. One should have faith in Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. To the degree one has faith and trust in Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, and superior Vaishnavas, to that degree one aligns one's will with their will. Okay. Now, Priyavrata Maharaj had absolutely no doubts on Brahma, no doubts on Swayambhumadhu. And Narada Muni, his guru, he sanctioned, he blessed. Okay, Priyavrata Maharaj, Brahma is saying, then Swayambhumadhu is saying, you can go and rule the kingdom. Narada Muni did not object. Narada Muni did not say, Brahma, why are you coming and taking away my disciple? I'm training him to be a lifelong celibate. I'm training him to be in the renounced order. But why are you unnecessarily coming and taking away my disciple? Narada Muni did not see. He is also obedient to Brahma, right? When Brahma descended, Narada Muni also offered obeisances. So understand that it's an important thing. So now you see, sometimes the instruction that one receives from a superior Vaishnava may or may not be palatable. Sometimes it's not palatable. Sometimes it's very difficult to execute. My God, how come he gave this kind of instruction? Okay. So one may delay execution sometimes by the circumstances, because of circumstances. Or one may even may not have the capacity also sometimes because of circumstances, because of lack of manpower or resources or talents, etc. But one should not lack in willingness to serve Guru and Vaishnavas. So willingness should not be less. So once that willingness and desire is there, eventually one will also develop the necessary ability to actually do the service also. For example, Prabhupada was instructed by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur to do what? To preach Krishna consciousness in English language to the English speaking audience. So Prabhupada said, how is it practical and all that? Initially he said that, but eventually he took that as his life mission, and he was eventually initiated by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and then he was always meditating on the instruction of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And for decades, Prabhupada struggled to establish a worldwide society of Krishna consciousness, right? 4 decades of preparation. So now apparently, if you see, before 1965, Prabhupada had only, I think, 1 initiated disciple. And after that, he had about 5,000-6,000 of disciples. Before 1865. So before that, so Prabhupada had 1965, sorry. Before 1965, Prabhupada had only 3 books. After that, Prabhupada had about 60 books. So now, before that, Prabhupada was not very much known. But after that, Prabhupada was known to the whole world, and he circled the globe 14 times. So before that, Prabhupada never crossed the border of India before 1965. But after 1965, Prabhupada has circled the globe 14 times. So like that, you see, apparently it seems that in the last 1 decade of Prabhupada's life, Prabhupada has received immense success. But that does not mean that the first four decades in which Prabhupada was struggling so much, that was also success. What was the success? The success in maintaining his willingness to please Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So Prabhupada was so committed to fulfill the desire of his spiritual master. Right? He was so determined, although he was failing in so many attempts. Now you see Leelamrit, Srila Prabhupada's Leelamrit, in the first volume, there is a chapter called Crying in Wilderness. So that whole chapter describes Prabhupada's attempts to spread Krishna consciousness, especially when he was staying in Delhi. Right? So he had to go to the printer, do the proofreading on his own, and like that, lot of description is there. So basically, Prabhupada underwent a lot of struggles, but he maintained his consistency in his attempts to fulfill the instruction of his spiritual master. So consistency in attempt and purity of intent. So within his intentions, he always wanted to please Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and he also was committed and consistent in his efforts to fulfill that instruction. So sometimes there could be a delay or anything, but the willingness is there, exhibited by so many great souls, right? For example, Madhavendra Puri was given the instruction to install Gopalji, and Madhavendra Puri did so by taking the help of all villagers. And Madhavendra Puri, just hardly 2 months, couple of months of worship happened after establishing Gopalji temple. Suddenly Gopalji says, I am still feeling very hot, so I need some chandan from Remuna, chandan from Jagannath Puri area, so that you apply that chandan, then I will cool down. Then Madhavendra Puri delegates the worship responsibilities to some brahmanas there, some devotees there, and then he goes all the way to Jagannath Puri alone by walk, no flight ticket booked for him. Right, all the way goes by walk, and then he was ready to please the Lord. Sometimes to execute the instruction of the Supreme Lord or Guru or the Lord's representatives or some superior Vaishnavas, it may be a little difficult sometimes, or very difficult, or it may not match our taste also, but still pleasing the Lord is more important. Now, Prabhupada also indicates that in the purport, there is one line, maybe in last paragraph somewhere there is a line. So Prabhupada says that sometimes it may be very difficult for a person to accept and execute, but still that obedience to the superior Vaishnavas, obedience to the will of the Lord is a very important principle. Now you see, in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the demigods and the demons were fighting. You see, Samudra Manthan has happened. All the demigods and demons churned the milk ocean, and nectar came out, and Mohini Murti came and distributed all the nectar to the devatas, and Rakshasas did not get anything, and they were so disappointed, discouraged, and they went into they started fighting with the demons, fighting with the devatas. So demigods and demons started fighting with each other. At one point, the devatas were losing. Although they drank nectar, still the demigods, the Rakshasas created so many illusions, and they could not handle that. So the Supreme Lord came on the back of Garuda and he dispelled those illusions created by the demons, and he killed some of the prominent demons like Kalanemi and all these people, and he went back. Then these devatas got a very great rejuvenated spirit, and they came and they started attacking the Rakshasas, and the demigods and demons fought again very fiercely, and the devatas were annihilating all the demons. And at one point, devatas were killing the demons so rampantly, and at one point they were about to extinguish the race of the demons only. Like demons were just getting, they were died. They were getting died very fast. Then suddenly Brahma tells Narada Muni, why is this fight happening now also? Okay, there was a fight in the beginning. So now the entire demon race is going to be extinguished, right? If the demigods fight like this, so go and stop the fight. Brahma called Narada Muni. And Narada Muni took this instruction of Brahma, and Narada Muni came to the devatas and said, on the battlefield, when the passion levels and determination levels are so high, revengeful attitude is so high, Narada Muni told the devatas, stop this fight. Enough. You got the nectar, you got the heavenly planets, you killed so many demons, there is absolutely no necessity to kill all the demons now. The demigods did not argue. If we kill the demons now, forever we'll not get any troubles from the demons. So let's just kill. No, Brahma says, Narada Muni said, so let us just give up this fight. So the demigods stopped the fight and went back to their abodes. And the demons just left. So stopping the fight when it is in the middle, when you are winning, it's not an easy thing. But because of their obedience to Narada Muni, obedience to Brahma, devata stopped the fight. This is obedience beyond logic. Now, in another context, Narada Muni instructed the devatas only. When devatas found that Hiranyakashipu went to perform some austerities, then the devatas, headed by Indra, went to Hiranyakashipu's palace and they kidnapped Kayadu. And they arrested Kayadu, and Narada Muni came there. And she was pregnant at that time. Prahlad Maharaj, little baby Prahlad, was there within the womb of Kayadu. Narada Muni came there and said, what are you doing here? So we are kidnapping this woman, pregnant woman. How can you catch another man's wife? She is innocent, she is pure, so you should not be treating her like this. Then Indra said, no, we are not going to harm her. When she gives birth to a child, then we will kill the child. This is our plan. Then Narada Muni said, why you want to kill the child? Then Narada Muni said, because this child is the son of a great demon named Hiranyakashipu. Just like Hiranyakashipu is tormenting the universe, this child is also going to torment the universe. So we want to kill this child before he becomes a very great demon. Then Narada Muni said, this child will not be a great demon. This child will be Prahlad, will be a very great Mahabhagavata devotee. Then the demigod said, oh, really? We didn't know this. They offered respects to Kayadu. They circumambulated Kayadu and they offered obeisances and left Kayadu in the care of Narada Muni, and they went back to heavens. Now you see, we know this story. So we hear this story and we say, oh, fine. Just let's keep ourselves in the positions of the devatas in that context. Narada Muni is making a statement which is now, it doesn't make much sense in that context. He says, how can the great
frozen.
So the Narada Muni, when he says something, it's very authoritative. He speaks what is truth only. And when he says something, it has to be authentic message. So all the demigods had a spontaneous trust and faith on this pure devotee Narada Muni's words. And they did not kill the child. So Now, so that trust on a pure devotee, intentions, and that obedience to the instructions of a pure devotee is a very important element of the performance of devotional service, and that brings us closer to Krishna. So it's 6:55. I'll conclude with one small example. Prabhupada writes this in the fourth canto, 22nd chapter. It's a Prithu Maharaj episode. Prabhupada says, this is that beautiful popular shloka. Yat pada pankaja palasa vilasa bhaktya karmashayam grathitam udgrathayanti santaha tadvanna riktamatayo yatayo piruddha sroto ganastamaranam bhajavasudevam. In this purport, I'll not give the meaning of the shloka. Basically, the meaning of the shloka is one who takes shelter of the Supreme Lord's lotus feet is the greatest devotee, and one has to always worship the Supreme Lord only. And other people of other process, yeah, this is the shloka. People who follow other processes like karma, karmis, jnanis, yogis, they cannot even control their senses, what to speak of, overcoming the material desires. Okay. So advice is worship the Supreme Lord. You can go to that same purport, whoever has showed that. Can you please show the same shloka? Yeah. Can you please scroll down the purport? Come down. Prabhupada gives a beautiful down. Little more. Yeah, this one. Yeah, this paragraph. Stop. One should therefore take shelter there. See this. River. Where is the river? Desires. Okay, it's moving very fast. Flowing of river. So, okay, you can read it later. I just located it. So, I'll tell the summary of this. So, basically, our sense gratificatory desires are like ripples of a river. Will the ripples on a flowing river will ever stop? No, they will never stop. Okay. But when the river meets the ocean, the huge tides or waves of that ocean become more prominent than that little ripples or waves of the river, isn't it? Similarly, our sense gratificatory desires are like ripples or small waves of a river. Okay, that will never stop. But when we meet a devotee, and when we align our desires with the desires or plans of a great devotee or guru, who always plans to render service to Krishna, our own material desires will become less prominent, and they'll be sidetracked, and the devotee's desires will become more prominent. So, the only way to control our material desires and give up our material desires is to align our desires with the desires of the Supreme Lord, which are actually communicated to us through His devotees. So, when we align our will and our activities to the will or plans of a pure devotee to serve Krishna, then we can give up our own sense gratificatory desires. That's the essence of that purport in short. So, here Priyavrata Maharaj was very obedient to the will of Brahma, and he gave up his own plan to be in the renounced order, and he accepted the responsibilities of the kingdom and household life and ruled with full responsibility, with full commitment. And after doing that service for a while, he again resumed his original position as a devotee of the Supreme Lord full time. And while doing that service, also he's a devotee, definitely. But according to his desire to exclusively focus on the service of the Supreme Lord, he again came back to his renounced order. So like that, Priyavrata Maharaj is a very great inspiration for all of us. Right? He's representing that obedience to the Supreme, obedience to superiors, and a sense of sacrificing his own way of performing devotional service, giving more priority and importance to the instructions of superiors who instructed him to serve the Supreme Lord only in a different way. Right? So trusting their intentions and being obedient to them is a very important principle in advancement in spiritual life. So thank you all very much. Grathra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya, Srila Prabhupada ki jaya.
Thank you so much, Prabhupada. Thank you so much, Prabhuji, for a beautiful and nectarian class. You gave many examples and it became more clear. And even I was thinking, actually, when we started this canto, I mean, who is right, Priyavrata or the instructions? But today it's more clear that you explained that our acharyas say that both of them are right, but it is the sacrifice of Priyavrata which is glorious. So thank you so much for explaining it so nicely, Prabhuji. I request all the devotees, if there are any questions or comments for Prabhuji, please go ahead. Prabhuji, how much time you have?
Yeah, you can ask questions.
Okay. Thank you, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji, Dandot Pranam, Mahagashti Srila Prabhupada. Very, very beautiful class, Prabhuji, as always. So I have a few questions, like, see, Uttanapada and his so many generation already passed, and now they are coming back to his brother. So it's like, you know, hard to digest.
Yes, yes. Some of these great personalities have very long lifespans. Now, what to speak of this is less wonderful. Now, Priyavrata's three sons, as I said, Uttama, Tamasa, Raivata, they became the rulers of third, fourth and fifth Manvantaras. Means they are living for across Manvantaras. One Manvantara is 71.25 Divya Yugas. At least Priyavrata again became the king within the same Manvantara, within Swayambhu Manu's tenure only. But Priyavrata's three sons became Manvantaras of third, fourth and fifth Manvantaras. They became Manus of those Manvantaras. Some of these great personalities have very long lifespan. For example, Markandeya Rishi lived for six Manvantaras and now also he's living like that. So some people are very long lived. We may not, it's inconceivable to us. It may be a little difficult for us to digest, but it's there.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. And one more question, Kardama Muni, he took sannyas directly after Grihastha life. So, we are supposed to take Vanaprastha in between, right?
Vanaprastha, sannyas, okay. I think he went to Vanaprastha. I think he directly went to sannyas, correct. It's okay, one can skip also. In Vanaprastha life, wife can accompany, okay. But Kardamuni's wife, Devahuti, was left in the care of Kapila Dev, and Kapila enlightened Devahuti, mother Devahuti also. He directly went to sannyas, it's okay, not a problem.
Thank you,
Prabhu. Thank you so much, Prabhuji. I think Kadamba Priyadas Prabhuji has raised his hand. Prabhuji, can please go ahead.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Please accept my humble obeisances, Prabhuji. Thank you so much, Prabhu, for the nice class. Prabhuji, first, I'm very grateful to you that you have authored such a nice books like Bhagavad Sambodhini, and I'm studying those books. And they're really very helpful, Prabhu, because I was studying Srimad Bhagavatam all by myself, and it was not that easy, but with these books, they are really very easy now. Thank you, Prabhuji, for that. Prabhuji, I have one question. I may have taken this thing differently, but kindly rectify me. So, Prabhu, like in Bhagavad Gita, in 1.36, we understand that there are six types of aggressors. And one of them is one who takes the land. So, can we understand that Suruchi is also trying to take away the land from Dhruva Maharaj? And if she is taking, then why then Suniti is telling Dhruva Maharaj to be humble? Because Dhruva Maharaj, if he is a king, then he is a Kshatriya as well. So, this is a little bit contrary, Prabhuji, here.
Okay. Very thoughtful question. So, my first chapter of Bhagavad Gita to 8th chapter of Bhagavatam, 4th canto of Bhagavatam. So basically, two things. In the name of being humble or tolerant, we need not allow others to exploit us. Okay. However, although this is a principle, it's not necessary to allow others to exploit us. But if one has the bandwidth to tolerate, and if he chooses to tolerate, that's fine. It's perfectly fine. right? So some devotees may have a taste or rasa to fight for justice, okay, and it is justified also. But some devotees may choose, it's okay, no problem, leave it, okay. But when to tolerate, when to fight, it's not black and white principle. So we may tolerate on a personal level, but we cannot tolerate when a community is being affected, when so many people are getting affected. Now our Arjuna said, I will tolerate, I will not fight, I will go and beg. Krishna says, no, so many people, they are troubled. They insulted Draupadi. How can you forgive them? You should fight. It's like that. So there are instances where exalted personalities taught a lesson to people who misbehaved or mistreated them. And there are also examples of personalities within our own scriptures who chose to tolerate on a personal level, of course, right? So now I'll give you two examples. Hope it will become more clear. You know the story of Srivas Thakur? Srivas Thakur, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associate in Navadvip. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srivas Thakur and many other exalted devotees, they would perform Harinam Sankirtan in Srivasangan every day, every night. So there is one envious person named Gopal Chapal. So this Gopal Chapal, he wanted to defame Srivas Thakur. So he kept some Kali worship paraphernalia in front of Srivas Thakur's house. And early in the morning, Srivas Thakur opened the house, opened his door. And he found this Kali worship paraphernalia. You know the story, right? So why? Basically, this envious Gopal Chapal wanted to defame him. Okay, that whole night they are doing this kind of worship, right? Mode of ignorance worship, something like that. So what did Srivas Thakur do? Oh, this is what he wanted. So he called all the neighbors. He said, see, this is what I'm doing every night. Every night I'm doing this kind of Kali Puja and all. Okay. And he called all the neighbors and then declared. So whatever Gopal Chapal wanted to prove, Srivas Thakur is personally admitting. Why? Basically, Srivas Thakur has absolutely no attachment to his fame, his image in the public. Okay, let whatever people may think, let them think. What difference does it make to me? So he was detached. Okay. On the other hand, there's another incident. In Dwaraka, there is this Satrajit. Satrajit, you know, Satyabhama's mother. He had the Samantakamani. So Krishna once went to Samantakamani, and the Samantakamani is known to give several pounds of gold on a daily basis. So Krishna once said, I think this one Samantakamani, which is a source of so much of wealth, cannot be in the house of one citizen. It should be given to the king. But Satrajit was so attached to this material object, Samantakamani, and he said, no, I will not give. He denied Krishna's instruction. So one day, Satrajit's brother Prasenajit wore this Samantakamani on his neck as if it was a necklace, and he went to hunt. And in the forest, this Satrajit's brother Prasenajit was killed by a lion. And Satrajit, meanwhile, came to Krishna and said in front of everyone, he was blaming Krishna, you must have stolen my Samantakamani. You must have killed my brother. Okay. So he was trying to defame. And what did Krishna do? Yes, I already did. He did not say that. He said, give me some time. Give me a few days to prove my innocence. So Krishna went with some few prominent Dwaraka vasis searching for this Samantakamani. He followed the footsteps of this lion. Then he found the footsteps of a bear, that is Jambavan. He went to Jambavan's cave. He fought with Jambavan for 28 days. He brought Samantakamani and gave it to Satrajit and said, see, I have not stolen. Okay, your brother only lost this. He lost his life along with Samantakamani. I did not steal. So Krishna proved his innocence because he's a leader. Okay. But Srivas Thakur was totally detached from his image. Who is right? Both are right. Krishna, who tried to prove himself right, is right. And Srivast Thakur, who did not even make an attempt to prove himself right, he even supported the person who is trying to defame him. He's also right. He's detached. There you glorify his detachment. Here you glorify his attempt to prove his innocence. Okay. So both are right. Depends on our own bandwidth to implement which is right and which is wrong. Okay. And also sometimes we may follow Srivast Thakur, sometimes we may follow Krishna also. Right? Depending on the situation. Somebody is saying, you have stolen Mahaprasad. You have not stolen. Okay, let him speak. It doesn't make much difference. Okay. No problem. He may tell 10 people. That's okay. No problem. Krishna knows. So you may think like that. Sometimes it's a very serious thing. You have to actually become your own self-appointed lawyer and then defend yourself. Sometimes it's needed also. So it all depends on time, place, circumstances. We can't apply one black and white rule everywhere. It depends on one's own bandwidth. So Suniti, Mother Suniti, chose to tolerate. She chose to take shelter of Krishna. She taught the same thing to her son. But her son did not take the advice completely. Right? He maintained revengeful attitude, although his mother told him not to maintain revengeful attitude. But he took one suggestion, that is worshipping the Supreme Lord to fulfill any desire. So he went. So different people implement things in different ways. Right? All are one way. Makes sense, Prabhu? Kadamba Priya Prabhu?
Yes, Prabhuji. Very nice. Thank you so much, Prabhu. Thank you, Prabhu. Can I ask one question, maybe if there is time?
If someone else doesn't have a question, then you can ask. Because you already asked one.
Maybe I will wait for the other devotees, Prabhu.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Hello,
Pranam, Prabhu. Yes. Sureshwarasham, Prabhu.
Yeah, nice class, Prabhuji. So, Prabhu, I have a question from this verse, Prabhu. So here, this verse, this word is used, Prabhu, where it says asu nityam, asu itam, right? It's saying to be jealous.
Mm.
I was unable to understand, Prabhu, why this thing was used in case of Priyavart Maharaj here, right?
Like he said that don't be jealous of me, don't be envious of me or the Supreme Lord. I mean, it's like like when you have a desire and someone is coming trying to obstruct your desire, you may feel a little angry or jealous or envious or whatever, right? So you may not give it such a deep literal importance, but in general he just said, don't be envious of me. Okay. Don't be jealous. Okay.
Okay.
Don't be jealous. Matlab, jealousy may come when someone tells you to do something against your desire. In that sense.
Right? Okay.
Very seriously.
Yeah, thank you very much, Prabhu. One comment, Prabhu. I want to tell devotees that I'm putting here in the chat session Bhagavad Gita 70 series lecture, verse by Prabhuji. All the verse by each, every chapter, verse by verse. And then Bhagavatam Prabhuji has recorded a Bhagavat Pravaha course, that is also 70 series. So I'm putting both in the chat here. Please save it. Those are very valuable sessions for later reference. Thank you very much, Prabhu. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, first of all, I want to say thank you so much for everything that you do. You know, you made us reading scriptures much easier for us. And I personally relish the nectar verses that you recorded in a series of videos. Those are really beautiful nectarian. Thank you, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, one question I have and I always struggle with is, especially when you talked about obedience to superiors and their instructions. So often, you know, with my own conditioning or conceptions, whenever an instruction comes, either I sometimes, you know, I feel, oh, it's not practical. Whatever they're saying is not practical. It's undoable. And sometimes, you know, superficially I say yes, but in the heart I say, you know, I don't put all my effort or whatnot, thinking it's not practical at all. And then there's also a guilty feeling, you know, that, you know, maybe this is right, you know, I'm not doing much or whatnot. And often I think it's my own conceptions. How to overcome those conceptions and inabilities, Prabhu?
It'll take a while, Prabhu. Nobody can become like Priyavrat Maharaj overnight. So it will take some time. And the struggle that you are presenting is the struggle of many other devotees also. Because
Kali Yuga, the nature of people is to doubt authority and not trust or keep faith on someone so easily. Okay. And it will take some time for us to, we need to pray. So three things are there: desire, prayer, and endeavor. We need to sincerely desire to have devotion and submission to Guru. And we need to endeavor to do so. And that a part of that endeavor is to associate with devotees who are actually having such good qualities. Okay. And just desire and endeavor are not sufficient. These are from our side. We need some Krishna support also. That is prayer. We need to offer a prayer to the Lord. Okay. To help us to overcome our own false egos and self-righteous attitudes, okay, and rebellious attitudes. Because of that rebellious attitude only, because of lack of obedience to the Supreme Lord only, because of a sense of aversion to subordination to Krishna only, we are staying in this material world. Okay, now we need to recultivate that subordination to Krishna and obedience and submissiveness to Krishna through his representatives, Guru and Vaishnavas. Right?
Yes, Prabhuji. Thank you so much, Prabhuji.
I'm also struggling, so please help. Please pray for me also. Shall we end here?
Hare Krishna Prabhuji.
Yes, Mataji.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. No question, Prabhuji. Just would like to thank you. I'm trying to do Bhakti Shastri and I'm referring to your book, Gita Subodhani. Prabhuji, I'm very grateful. I was very, I had a great desire to hear from you. And since I've just got my courier, last week of your book. Prabhu, since you're yourself here, could you throw a little light on how should we go about, now we're trying to study Gita, but how should we refer your book for that? Connecting links I found very, very useful, and a word a meaning about them. So little light if you could throw, Prabhuji, how can we improve further?
There is no one process or one way of going through the book. So basically, it's a quick study guide where I have given a summary of all the 700 shlokas of Gita and Bhagavatam, whatever number of shlokas are there. So now the quick summary that I write for each shloka in that Gita Subodhani or Bhagavata Subodhani or Chaitanya Subodhani is a combined understanding that I have taken from the shloka and the word-to-word meanings given by Prabhupada and the translation given by Prabhupada and also the translation given by Baladeva Vidyabhushan and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. So I would read all these five and condense it and then put in just like a couple of lines that is most easily understandable for an average reader. Of course, sometimes the three acharyas might give little different perspectives also, but whatever is easier, I generally stick to Prabhupada's flow of thought, but certain links and all I take from the other acharyas also. So basically, it's a synopsis, the synopsis of the shloka in a very short form, right, in a condensed form. So basically, you need to read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is. That's the basic, important, primary reference book. Now, keeping Gita Subodhi next to it, we'll also give a quick summary of what Prabhupada has given, along with certain inputs from Baladeva Vidyabhushan and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur also. Especially the notes that I give below the shlokas, occasionally under some shlokas. So that's a combination of multiple acharyas or certain insights given by other acharyas also. Baladeva Vidyabhushan and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur only, and Prabhupada's certain special points. So read Prabhupada's as it is, right? But you may find a chapter covered in some 50-60 pages. But in Subodhani, that overview of the entire chapter is 5-6 pages. Right, so you will get a bird's eye view. You will get now when you have some 50-60, for example, second chapter has 72 shlokas. So in that first 10 shlokas, Arjuna is basically preparing
to surrender to Krishna. And he expressed, please guide me. Okay. Now, that 10 shlokas may be covered over some 15-20 pages in the book, right? Sometimes when you are reading a few pages now and then after 3 days, again, next few pages like that. So sometimes it may be a little difficult to keep track. So what I did in Subodhi is just give a full glance of entire chapter in just 1 or 2 pages in a table, in a flowchart, and then shloka by shloka synopsis, dividing it into sections and subsections. So now a summary of this 10 shlokas is there in 1.5 page there. Then 11 to 20 is the jnana section, the knowledge of matter and spirit, the science of soul. Okay, so as a quick summary of it. And very important shlokas I had given in line by line translation. Now you see 4-line shloka and you see a paragraph translation there. So oftentimes we may not be able to relate the Sanskrit with that, because although Prabhupada has given the word-to-word meaning, sometimes devotees may not be able to see that. At least for very important shlokas, if you can read the phrase-by-phrase meaning. Okay. Now, ultimate, it's easy to see the individual meanings of individual words and try to generate a translation, which Prabhupada has done. And Prabhupada also gives a purported understanding also in the translation. But if you can also see like phrase by phrase translation of each line of the shloka, you can get a little more insight. It may be a little easier. I just felt and then did like that. Okay. So you will get all these features. You will get all these features. So shloka, getting a little familiar with the shloka, okay, by knowing the phrase by phrase translations of some selected important shlokas. And also you will have the synopsis of each verse, which is a combination of understanding given by multiple acharyas occasionally. And you get additional notes from purports. And you get links and connections between shlokas. And you have the entire chapter divided into sections and subsections. Right? So that way you get a wide survey of the entire thing. So you can use this before beginning the study so that you will know what's going to come. And after the study also one can see, so that you can revise. Okay. So it's like a beginning, before beginning the study or after completing the study also, or during the study also. However, this Subodhana is never a replacement for a systematic and detailed study of Prabhupada's books. It's just an accompaniment. Okay. Just for you to, you know, support and then where are you, understand in the context of the shlokas and all that. Right, because people may not have so much time to go through everything and remember what they have studied. So just this is very quick reference, my humble service. Mainly, Prabhupada's books are the origin of everything. Everything is coming from Prabhupada's books only. So all these efforts are dedicated to Prabhupada. And without Prabhupada's books, these study guides or small books may not even manifest only. It is Prabhupada who has introduced Bhagavad Gita to the whole world in especially English speaking language, which the whole world can understand. So if you can read Prabhupada, you don't need Gita Subodhana. Right?
Oh, no, so, Prabhu, it's very especially links. Prabhu, Prabhupada's commentaries we are reading, definitely, but how important are, I mean, is it to read other commentaries? Like you also referred that you also
refer. It depends on your appetite. So Prabhupada is essential, like basic rice dal chapati sabji. Right? So, but Prabhupada never discouraged us to read the other acharyas commentaries also. Right? In the first canto, first chapter, first purport, Prabhupada himself writes the names of several Vaishnava acharyas. Okay? And he says a serious student would do well in studying those commentaries that these great acharyas have given us. So, yeah, you can relish more, you can go deep, but first Prabhupada. Once you are done with Prabhupada, then you can do all that. But Prabhupada has given the most, basically he did the analysis, he gave us the essence. Okay. So now we don't have much time. Sometimes we may not have much intellectual capacity also to digest everything. So analysis Prabhupada has done, he gave us the essence. And I must say, before, like after reading Prabhupada,
right? And later you read previous Acharya's commentaries also, and you read Prabhupada's commentary, Prabhupada's purports, you understand that understanding is already there in this. So by reading, by analyzing all that, you will come to this conclusion which Prabhupada is saying. So Krishna says, okay, karma yoga, jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga, then bhakti yoga. So he will systematically bring the hearer to the stage of appreciating the supremacy of bhakti yoga. But Prabhupada says bhakti yoga is supreme from beginning only, practically every page of Bhagavad Gita only. So he does the analysis, he gives us the essence. So any page you open in Bhagavad Gita, you will be able to appreciate bhakti yoga. And even if it is karma yoga, Prabhupada glorifies bhakti yoga. That's his speciality. He's the most compassionate acharya. He gives us the essence. He repeatedly gives us the essence along with practice. Okay. He doesn't only give us mandha jnana. He gives us a lot of inputs of abhideya, how to practice the process, how to implement the process like that. So how important it is to read previous acharya's commentaries? Yes, it is important, definitely. If you have the appetite and time and ability, but first Prabhupada, that's what I did. That's what I would recommend also. So once you complete the Prabhupada's purpose, you can always refer to the previous Acharya's commentaries. Makes sense?
Thank you so much. Yes,
and Prabhupada's commentaries are available in English, understandable language. Other commentaries are in Sanskrit, and somehow Bhanu Maharaj's mercy, we have them, many of them in English now.
Yes, Prabhupada. My good fortune, I could... personally ask you, and that I'll be sharing it in my Bhakti Shastri class also now, that I personally spoke to you. Thank you so much. Thank you for
your... Thank you, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, there is one question in chat. Do you have time or it's already time for you? There is a small question in chat. Can I read, Prabhuji?
Yeah.
Thank you so much for wonderful class. Yes.
Can you explain how Priyavrata went around the sun?
Was yes.
Priyavrata an earthly planet? How was he able to do this feat? So, in principle, there is one shloka in the fifth canto, first chapter only. So it's not so wonderful for Priyavrata because he is the devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known as Urukrama. Means. He is the performer of most wonderful feats. So we need not become... Okay, let me just open that shloka. Can someone open somewhere 39 or 38 shloka of first chapter 5.1.38, something like that. Gop. Gop. 37, 36. 30, 34. No, I think the scrolling is faster. 1 minute.
Prabhuji, is it 30 and 31?
No, 34. 30, 31 is the orbit, the concept is being done. 33, you can see. 33 and then 35 is the right word. 35 is the right verse. Yes. See, naivam vidha Yannama dheyam adhuna sajahati bandham. Go to the translation, please. Yeah. A devotee who has taken shelter of the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord can transcend the influence of six material waves, and he can conquer the mind and senses. However, it is not very wonderful for a pure devotee of the Lord, because even a person beyond the jurisdiction of the four castes, means untouchable, is immediately relieved of the bondage to material existence if he utters the holy name. So just by the power of the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, even an untouchable person also becomes purified. So Priyavrata Maharaj is creating this the seven oceans is not a very wonderful thing. That's what the Acharya's, that's what Prabhupada says. Okay. So Prabhupada is writing here that You can see the purport. Urukrama is the name for Lord Vamanadeva who performed the wonderful act. Okay, this is all about Urukrama's explanation. Go down. Similarly, this Privrata Maharaj also created seven oceans in the Bhumandala by the strength of his devotion to Lord Urukrama. If the Lord performs wonderful activities, why can't his devotees perform the wonderful activities? Okay, by his empowerment. That's the meaning of this whole shloka, which is given here only. Someone is asking here, that how can he make this, how can he perform this feat? By the strength given to them by the Lord only. There is no other reason. Okay. Make sense?
Yes, Prabhuji, thank you so much. So, Prabhuji, does it mean that there was no darkness that time because there were two suns?
Yes, yes.
There was always the light?
Yeah, always there is light. Correct.
Okay. Thank you so much, Prabhuji. Thank you so much for your time. So, devotees, if there are no more questions, with the permission, I would like to end the call here. Thank you so much once again, Prabhuji, for your valuable time and association. We are always looking forward to your class, Prabhuji. So, we look forward to your class again in future. Thank you so much. I would like to pay obeisances to Prabhuji and all the devotees. Vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhu vaivacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namah ananta koti vaishnava vrinda ki jai granthra shrimad bhagavatam ki jai shrila prabhupad ki jai his grace gauranga darshan prabhuji ki jai. Thank you so much, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna.
Thank you.